Hello and welcome to The Road Less Traveled. Gary L. and Gigi's Boo here. Hope everyone's doing fine. Hello, Gigi's Boo. How are you?
Hi. How's everybody?
Yeah. So what have you been up to tonight?
Well, doing a little research on the show most all day. And talking to my little niece. Keeping our dog out of trouble. And that's about it. What have you been up to?
Oh, not much. Just doing about the same thing. So, anyhow, hope everyone's well out there. Happy to see folks in the chat room at reallibertymedia.com. Hello. Anybody listening who's not in the chat room can go to reallibertymedia.com. And about halfway down the page, there's a IRC applet. You can just click enter or connect or whatever it says. Or you can put a name in. You can be all fancy and come in with a name if you like. Otherwise, the system will apply a name to you. And you can come in anyway. So you don't have to do any crazy things like pay a fee or put money in a toll booth or do any kind of fancy captchas. You can just come on in and say hello to everyone in the chat room, like Asmo and Beth and Cowboy Tech and Grimner and Moose Girl and Kate and Beetle and Charleston and Chloe and Graham Z. Hello. And I be Don C. And Java Doctor, Meister Brow, P. Bunyan, Rob Work Sock Puppet, Vin E. RLM Radio. Wow. And Vin Z. And Behind the Woodshed. Hello, Hal. Colfax. Gigi's Boot. And I be Don C. again. Yehovah, Wanatako, Kozu, and trust no one.
Kate said, got it. Your now playing still says hell, though.
I don't know. I don't have any control over that. So that's beyond my control. That has to do with certain metadata that I can't do anything with. Maybe, let me see. Click on settings. No, I don't have any. I can't do anything about that booboo bear. Nope, that's out of my control. Sorry about that, though. Anyway, hello, Kate. Thanks for bringing that up. Jesus Boo, what are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about the mountains and the foothills and the coast, maybe some ghost stories, some of things that can't be explained. It's going to be a real good show, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you some experiences that I've had and some of my family's had, and it'll be really good.
Yeah, I have a few tales to tell, seeing how we're both on the Appalachians, and so we're comfortable talking about these things. And I don't know how many people know much detail about the Appalachian area. Some people call it Appalachian, and that became popular back in the 60s and 70s, when the Ivy Leaguers decided to get involved with Appalachia. And we despise that word, that pronunciation. It is so incorrect. And it's so pretentious. It's Appalachian. Sorry about your luck. Anyway, just my little commentary there on that crap. It's always...
Of course, they say we talk funny.
Of course, we talk funny. We talk funny.
We're a lot like the people down in the bayou, the Cajuns. We have our own little dialect.
That's right.
And our own words that we use. Sometimes they can be really mind-blowing.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the Appalachian accent or dialect is that it's consistent all the way down through the mountain chain and into Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Even into Alabama.
Yeah, right. I personally have been able to identify where people are from, like I've never met them before, except to listen to them talk. And I said, oh, I know where you're from. And they'd be... excuse me.
Just right up the road a piece.
Yeah. Of course, Appalachians are 1,500 miles long. It's quite a length of mountains. Sorry, I had to mute there a minute. Got a little cough trying to kick up. Gigi's Booge, you know that the Appalachians are 480 million years old.
Don't surprise me, because us Cherokee said we've been there for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah, the Appalachians were first formed about 480 million years ago during the Ordovician period. And at one time, they reached elevations similar to those of the Alps and the Rocky Mountains before the natural occurring erosion, you know, brought them to today's maiden ants, as some people call them. Yeah, Appalachians has been around for a long time. People apparently have been there for a long time.
Right.
And no wonder it's so rich with stories, and a lot of those have been imported from Ireland and Scotland, along with the people who came there.
Some Germans, too. Germans settle there.
Well, of course. The German part of my family settled in the German New River Valley settlement. It doesn't get much more German than that. In fact, they exclusively spoke German in the churches there up until about the turn of the century. So it was a very impacted area. And then you had the local residents who'd been there for a long time in the form of Cherokee, mainly. And then you had the Catawba further down, right?
That's right. Catawba was on down near the river, maybe in what they call the Piedmont. And then Lalumbee were over near the coast.
Mm-hmm. And on the Virginia side, they had the Powhatan Confederation. Also, so those folks been around here for a very long time, just like the mountains. And so it's not, like I said, it's not surprising we have so many stories. And I think you have one you'd like to start out with, don't you, Gigi's Boo?
I thought you were going to start out on some little.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that first.
Okay. Then we'll go to my story that my sister.
Yeah, and some of the Appalachian folk beliefs. These are kind of cool, and like I said, you know, such a history, and it's always been full of superstitions and different things like that. And some actually seem kind of silly, but others are based on real observation. So, for example, let's run down a few here. One cure for the hiccups is to tickle your nose with a feather. You ever heard of that, Gigi Spoon?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Eating parched corn or parched coffee will cure stomach ailments.
That's true.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That works.
Yeah. To stop bleeding from a wound, apply chimney soot.
Yep.
Which is straight carbon. That would make sense. Let's see.
And you wrap your finger in a spider web because it helps it mend with the soot. Yeah.
That's right. If you dream about crossing water, there will be an illness in the family. Interesting.
Never heard that one.
Mm-mm. Hey, Cowboy Tech. Nice to see you in the chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. I think a lot of us have heard this one. If your hand itches, it means someone will give you a present soon.
Money.
Yeah. Now, a couple of things that we know do work here. For a snake bite, cut up the snake that bit you and press its flesh to the wound. This will draw out the poison. Actually, I think Cherokee have a slightly different approach to that, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cherokee, if you have a snake bite, you kill some type of bird or fowl and just gut it. And when you do, you put it right over on the bite, and the heat of the bird's body along with the blood will draw the poison out.
Mm-hmm. And raw wet tobacco will draw the venom of an insect sting.
That's true.
And that's true. I've seen that done. It works. All right. Of course, I think a lot of people eat black-eyed peas on New Year's Day, don't they?
Oh, Lord, yeah, along with some greens of some kind.
Yeah, and folks out there in the chat room, you guys eat black-eyed peas on New Year's Day? Or is that something that we just took, assumed?
I think that's kind of predominant to the South, I think. Okay. Think up North eat sauerkraut and something else.
Okay. Here's one that Hal will appreciate. If a cricket chirps in your fireplace, you will have good luck.
That's true.
Okay. It's bad luck to put shoes back in the box before wearing them.
Never heard that.
I never heard that either. It's bad luck to sneeze at the table.
Never heard that.
Mm-mm.
But that makes sense. If you sneeze, you're going to throw germs everywhere.
That's true. If a black cat crosses your path, it's bad luck. Unless the cat crosses from right to left.
I've heard that one, but never the right to left. Well, just any time it crosses in front of you.
I was always told that you cross it out. You know, the sign of the cross across the...
Yeah.
That's what I was always told. It's bad luck to run backwards. Well, no kidding, Herkimer. You'll trip and bust your head.
How do you run backwards?
I don't know. Okay. Now, let's talk about love. Mr. Boombastic.
Oh, Lord.
Break a coin under the new moon and sew half of it in the clothes of the person you're after, and the person will fall in love with you. Now, I want to know exactly how you break a coin.
Well, back then, the coins, maybe when that was put out, the coin was softer metal, think?
If it was silver, I guess you could work it till you broke it. Yeah, I guess so. Uh-oh. If your lover is going to cheat on you, sprinkle salt in the path, and the lover will turn around and come back.
Never heard that.
Nah, I never heard that either. Hello, Rome's. Rome's just jumped in the chat room. Yeah. Let me see. Are we updated yet? Oops. Hang on. Let me get myself situated here. Nope, not yet. Oh, well. I don't have the ability to change that, unfortunately. I used to, but that was on a different computer, and KVIRC doesn't give me that level of access. Let's see. If you look in a mirror held over a spring, you will see the face of the person you will marry. How interesting.
That's very Appalachian.
Yeah.
My grandmother said that all the time.
Yeah.
Or look, hold it over the whale. If you have a whale and you can hold it,
right.
Hold it at an angle and, you know, up, and then you can see it. So, yeah, I always heard that.
Okay. Strike a match and hold it upside down. If it burns to the end, it means your mate loves you truly.
Yeah, but you're going to have burned fingers.
I was just going to say, you have to be pretty faithful to hold on to that match. Okay. Oh, here's a good one. Hey, Darth. Name a fishing hook after the person you love. If you catch a fish with a hook, it means the love is true.
Never heard that one.
I didn't either. Okay. If a girl takes the last piece of bread from a plate, she will be an old maid.
Never heard that one either.
Me neither. Sunshine on your wedding day means a happy marriage.
Well, I never heard it, but that makes sense. You're starting off with brightness.
I don't know. I can personally say that's not true. for anyone who knows that. Okay, if your lips itch, it means you want to be kissed. Ask Atticus. Atticus, see if his lips are itching. Mr. Boombastic.
That's Mr. Lover-Lover for
Mr. Lover-Lover. Spirits. Ooh, let's talk about real quickly here. Spirits. A horseshoe hung over the door keeps witches and evil spirits away. A lot of people just do that for good luck, but apparently in the Appalachians, it's a little more specific. To keep away ghosts, put salt on the fire, or carry the left hind foot of a graveyard rabbit.
Poor little rabbit.
I assume a graveyard rabbit is one that you've killed in the cemetery, right?
Yeah, have to be.
And if you want to carry a snakeskin bag with a toad's eye inside, it will ward off ghosts. Wow. I haven't heard any of those. Although, as we were talking pre-show, people had a tendency to hang gourds on their front porch. Hang them from the, the overhang, on the front porch. And gourds you don't eat. So we assume that was some talisman of some sort. Okay. And how about the weather? A lot of these you've probably heard of. If your nose itches, it's a sign of rain. When roosters crow at night, expect rain the next day. You ever heard of that?
No.
Me neither.
Rooster crowed at night around my family. He'd be in the pot the next day.
Hey, old nasty rooster.
Yeah.
I have heard that if a snapping turtle bites you, it won't let go until it hears thunder, or until the sun goes down. That's right.
Sun goes down. Mm-hmm.
Lots of nuts and berries means the winter will be severe. That makes sense.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Anyway, that's some of the Appalachian folk beliefs that came from a variety of sources. And so, all right, Boo Boo Bear, I think you have a little story to share, two or three or four.
Here we're going to talk about an incident. We're first going to talk about a ghost that is, excuse me just a minute. I had to clear my throat, I'm sorry. A ghost that apparently shows up around Columbia, South Carolina, at the Buster Boyd Bridge. I don't even know if the Buster Boyd Bridge is still there anymore, but it was there at one time. And what happened was a girl was trying to get home because her mother was very ill and dying. And she ran off right at the beginning of the bridge. I don't think she went into the water. She was just killed by hitting some trees and things. And she never got home to her mother, and her mother passed away. And she's supposed to appear ever so often as a hitchhiker. And she's very lifelike looking, and a lot of people have picked her up. And they all end up with the same story. But the story I'm going to tell you really happened to my sister Renee's guy friend. He and his buddy were traveling. They were in service, and they were going back to the camp. And they went down through there, and they saw this girl hitchhiking. And they stopped and asked her if she needed a ride. And she said, yes, my car broke down, and I need to get to. And she gave them the address of her mother and daddy's home. And they said, well, get in, we'll take you, because it was late. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And they said, you don't need to be out at this time of night trying to get a ride or whatever. So she got in, and she conversed with them a little bit, but she was extremely polite but kind of quiet. And so they just turned around and left her alone. And one of them asked her, now, what's the address that you need to go? So they got it, and they wrote it down, and they told her to just take it easy, that they would get her there. And they crossed over the bridge and got probably 10 miles outside of Fort Jackson, and they turned around, and there was nobody in the car. Nobody. And these guys are not—they're not wusses. They don't scare easy, but they put the car on the side of the road. They looked down the floorboard. They looked, there were, the doors had not been opened. They had not heard it. So they decided that they were going to go to this address because they just could not, for the life of them, to understand why and what happened to this girl that she would have disappeared from the back seat of their car. They pulled up in front of the house, and one of the guys got out and went to the door and knocked. And the gentleman answered the door. It was in the middle of the night. He said, "Sir, I'm sorry to awaken you." He said, "I know why you're here. You picked up a young girl, and she was coming here, right?" And the man just, the guy looked at him and said, "Yes." And he said, "That was my daughter." And he said, "She was killed years ago, and she constantly tries to get here to see her mother, who is no longer living." Those guys were literally spooked to death. From then on, they would not, they went a different route. They would not go over that bridge. And they were really, really frightened about that. And we went down several times, you know, trying to see if we could see it. But I think because we were hunting it, it never appeared to us. But it has appeared. In fact, they did a little segment around Halloween one time about it, and she's been sighted several times. I mean, not, it just it, she doesn't go long periods. It's like might be a year, and then they'll see her. Then they, somebody might see her three or four times that year, and just it's just really very scary, very strange, just frightening, and that always made me think, oh my gosh. Those poor guys were really kind of snuckered into that, and they thought they were doing a good job, and they had picked up a ghost, and that's that story, and that's really true. I wish Renee was able to be on; she could tell y'all about it. She has a little bit more info than I have, you know. Okay. But that's what she told me.
Yeah, that's really weird. Huh? Yeah. That's weird.
Yep.
What about the hound, hounds, ghost town of Goshen? What do you know about that?
Oh, my gracious. Well, this happened many, many years ago, the first sighting, and it's on Buncombe Road, and it's in Newberry County, and it's not far from the area that we're in, and people go down all the time. And, of course, we went. And I don't usually go and look at anything like this phantom woman or this dog. But everybody had been talking about it. And it was the talk around here. And they call it, it's a big white dog. And they call it the ghost town of Goshen. Goshen is community where this took place. And it's been witnessed by a lot of people. One story has it that the dog... was with a peddler that peddled his wares, you know, a tinker man is what they called him years ago. And he was falsely accused of murder, and he was hanged. And he was buried out at the Ebenezer Church, where this dog kind of roams back and forth. Now, I don't know if that's so or not. That's just one word. But I do know that... the earliest sighting was in about 1855 when Mr. William Hardy sent a young slave to the home of Dr. George Douglas to bring the doctor back to look at one of the sick men on his farm. And when the young man arrived at the doctor's house, he was terrified. He was terrified. He said, "I can't do this. I can't talk. I can't do anything." And he said, "I was riding on a mule coming to your house, and he heard an awful noise coming from behind him. And he said he saw the biggest, whitest dog he'd ever seen in his life. And he immediately spurred the mule on to hurry the animal. And he almost threw him off because he was going so fast. And the next time he looked, the dog was in front of him. And they said the dog just stared at him. And before he got to the doctor's yard, the dog veered off and went into the woods. And so the doctor told him, he said, I just think maybe you are mistaken. And he said, sir, please don't send me back. Let me stay with you until my master, I can't come back. So he did. Then years later, another doctor saw the animal. He said he was not able to give a rational answer for what he saw. He said even his own dog, who would walk beside him and go with him, he said, until they got to that Ebenezer Cemetery, and the dog would start whining and disappear into the woods until the doctor passed it, where the dog's territory, the Goshen dog's territory was, and then he would come back and rejoin him. And there was another man in 1936 that kind of came face to face with him. And when he did, he ran all the way home and screamed. And he said that he said the dog made it to the door, but it did turn and it went back in the woods. And then another woman in 1970 was supposed to have had an encounter with this dog in her yard, and it grew and leaped at her. And the woman fainted, and when she woke up, the dog was nowhere to be sound. Found, I didn't mean to say sound. So it's been seen. Well, we heard it, and God bless my mama, she's not scared of nothing. And she said, we're going to go see. And so the road that we went on, she found it. She found the church. That's a lonely stretch of road, I kid you not. Lonely stretch. Very few houses, even to this day. And when I tell you it's dark, it's pitch black. And it scared me senseless. I didn't get to see it, but I wanted to say that I have been down there. And my crazy mama rolled down the window and she said, come on, I got some kibbles and bits. And she was laughing at us. Whether this is true or not, I do not know. I never have seen it. But we stopped and talked to a black gentleman that was getting ready to go down the road that was parallel to Buncombe Road. And we asked him about it, and he said, well, miss, he said, that spook's been here for a long time. And he said, that's what it is. It's a spook. And he said, a lot of people says it's a mad dog, but, you know, it don't seem like it's mad to me. He said, the one time that some of my people saw it, it was just kind of bouncing along with them. And we call it the happy dog. So it has two names, the Hound of Goshen and then the happy dog. And most people that you talk to in that area now call it the happy dog. Now, has it become better with its personality through all of its years of haunting? Who knows? Or is it how people perceive it? Don't know. Is it a myth or is it real? I don't know. But I did try to see it, and I couldn't see it, but a lot of people have. And it's a great mystery down there, too, that one is. Yeah, very much so.
That's creepy, Boo Boo Bear.
Who are you telling? I was sitting up there with my mom.
That's creepy stuff. Have you ever heard of the story about the saluting ghost of Fort Sumter, South Carolina?
Yes, I have.
I think I'll share that one. Of course, all you guys out there know Fort Sumter is located in Charleston Harbor. And that was where essentially the first act of aggression occurred in the Civil War. But of course, like many things, there are ghosts surrounding Fort Sumter. But this one story doesn't come from the battle itself, but rather from the act of surrender. Union Army Major Robert Anderson was in charge of the fort when Confederate Brigadier General P.G.T. Beauregard sent three aides to the fort to demand its surrender. Major Anderson, without either the supplies nor the authority to properly defend the fort, stalled as long as he could. But the tactic was futile. At 4:30 a.m. on Friday, April 12, 1861, the Confederate Army opened fire on the fort. 4:34 hours, shells rained down on Fort Sumter. The Union soldiers did what they could to fight back, but it was of no use. On Saturday, April 13th, Fort Sumter was surrendered to the Confederates. Surprisingly, no Union soldiers were killed in the battle, and only one Confederate lost his life due to a cannon misfire. Upon surrender, Major Anderson was allowed one final command of his troops. He ordered a 100-gun salute to the Union flag before it was replaced by a Confederate flag. On the 47th shot, a gun misfired and killed Union soldier Daniel Howe. He was buried at the fort later, just before the last of the Union troops were transferred off the island and headed for New York. Since that day, people have reported seeing the ghost of a Union soldier at the fort. Others have reported seeing smoke and smelling gunpowder as if a shot had just went off. Possibly the strangest thing is what happened to the Fort Sumter flag. The flag that Daniel Howe was saluting when he was killed. Shortly after the battle, the flag developed a faded area just to the right of the center star. It is said that the area shows a man's face with a Union cap, and the features of the man strongly resemble that of Daniel Howe. The flag can still be seen at the Fort Sumter Museum. Whether it shows the visage of a long-dead Union soldier is something that you have to decide. What do you think about that story, Boo Boo Bear?
Oh, I think it's him.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's him.
Yep. How interesting. Okay. Let's see now.
Let's talk about the gray man.
The gray man. Go ahead.
Okay. We touched on this a couple of weeks ago. But the gray man, they say that it originated on Pawnee's Island in South Carolina. Now, not for sure about that because he's been seen at Myrtle Beach. He's been seen off of Hatteras. He's been seen everywhere. But he's walked the coastline for over 200 years. And his presence usually means impending danger for the people that are along the coastline. And he's responsible for saving a lot of lives when he wasn't able to save his own. And it's always been told that if you see the gray man and a storm comes, nothing will happen to your home. And this is a story of a young woman in about 1822. She was staying on the island with her family when she received word that her fiancé was going to join her on the island after going to see his family. Of course, like any young woman in love, she was very, very delighted. And she had the servants prepare all of his dishes and decorate the house in anticipation for his arrival. When the time came for him to arrive, no one showed up. She waited for hours to be visited, and one of her fiancé's servants came with the tragic news. It appears as they were traveling down the road, her fiancé was in great spirits and challenged his servant to race on their horses, and they raced down the strand. And when he saw a shortcut through the marsh, he decided to take it. You know, fate stepped in. His horse stumbled, throwing the rider off. When he tried to stand, he found he was sinking in quicksand. And despite his best efforts and his companions, he was unable to free himself, and he sunk beneath the sand. Now, the news drove this girl mad, and she walked hours on Pawnee's Island. And in one afternoon, she's kind of out walking, you know, and she saw a man looking out over the water. And as she got closer to him, she thought to herself, she said, you know, he looks familiar to me. That is the man that I love. And so when she got a few feet from the man, she realized that it was. And suddenly a wave burst from the sea, enveloped him, and he was gone. She told her family what she'd seen. They, of course, they thought that she was losing her mind. But that night, she had a terrible dream of being in a small boat in the ocean, tossed around like a ball. And the wreckage was all around her. And she could see her lover standing on the dune, trying to wave to her. And she was trying to wave to him. When she woke up, she was terrified. So her father took her and the rest of the family to Charleston to see a doctor. Now, this was real fortunate because within hours of their leaving, a hurricane struck the coast. When it was almost over, all the inhabitants of the North Inlet had died. Realizing that her love had returned to save her, she returned to her normal self. Now, people still claim they see the gray man. And in 1954, a grandmother on vacation with her family saw a man dressed completely in gray fade to a blur before fading away. The next day, tornadoes ripped through the area. One person has tried to chase the gray man, only to have him disappear in front of her eyes. This is a big legend in South Carolina that the gray man does appear, and it's on the news every time we have a hurricane that makes landing in Charleston or any part of the coast of South Carolina. People will come forward and say, I saw the gray man. And the people that saw the gray man, their houses were spared. So there is something to this. Not sure what it is, but there is something to it. I find the gray man very, very fascinating.
And what a similar story to the Mothman.
Right.
It's a very, very similar thing. How interesting. Okay, Gigi's Booth, but 22 minutes before the hour, and we have our main event to go, right?
Right.
How many people have heard of the Brown Mountain Lights? Are you familiar with those? Gigi's Booth, tell us, where's Brown Mountain?
Brown Mountain is in a beautiful place. Very, very beautiful. It's in Burke County. That's over in the western part of, well, not exactly western part, but to the edge of the western part of North Carolina. And it's a mountain range on the South Mountains that come down even into the Piedmont, the lower ridge of the mountains. And they usually say that when conditions are right, you can see the mysterious glowing orbs that can be seen to rise up the mountains and hover and wobble about 15 feet in the air and then disappear. Now, these lights are real because I've been there. First time I saw them, I was a child, and I was with my grandfather. And I thought it was just absolutely beautiful what I was seeing. We've got a couple of YouTube videos we're going to drop in the chat room after we get through talking about this, so you can actually see them. These lights have been around since the early days. We're talking about even before the covered wagons come through. It was talked around the campfires of my people. And the legend has it that the Cherokees and the Catawba had a great battle on the mountain. And they were just devastated. Both tribes were devastated. And legend has it that the Cherokee women, their spirits are the ones with torches, and they're roaming the mountains to find their beloved husbands, sons, fathers, whatever. All I can tell you is they have tried to explain it. Early in the 1900s, they tried to say it was the locomotive light that was coming from a train, the reflection. But they had a great flood, and the train was washed out, and the lights continued. Then they tried to bring up that it was gases that were escaping and igniting with the air that was causing the bowl's light. But Gary and I have talked about this a lot. When you see these videos, especially on the second video, you will see it, and it actually looks like it's burning. And I was brought back to when Moses climbed Mount Sinai, and he said that God appeared, he saw the burning bush, but it was not being consumed. That's the way these lights look. They don't look like they're consuming anything, and they're not. They're not consuming anything.
Right. And as we'll hear, and I actually have a recording that's from a National Geographic survey of the Brown Mountain. Before we do that, tell us a little bit about the geography there. What kind of geography?
Okay. What I was going to say is Brown Mountain is a very mysterious mountain, and I almost want to say it's foreboding. And what I mean by that, it's a very dangerous place. I've been all over it with my grandfather. Would never, ever go on that mountain in the dark for this reason. You might be walking in a forest, beautiful trees, walking, and you don't pay any attention. The next step you make will be nothing but a sheer cliff, and you can fall 200, 250 feet with no warning. It's just mysterious in that nature. There's been people who have said that they would be in the forest up there, and they would hear things, and they would look around. There was nothing there. Maybe somebody called to them, or one man swore that he was turning around and he started falling, and he knew he was falling, and he was on a four-wheeler, and it was just tumbling over like a somersault, and never one time did that four-wheeler crush his chest. It was like something held it up. You do know it's a magical place. It's full of mystery, magical, mystical. It's a beautiful place. I saw the lights when I was little, and I've seen them since then many, many, many times. And I'm always in awe when I see them. But I remember one time when I was about 16, I was up there with my granddad. And like I said, we were standing there, and all of a sudden he said, there's the light. And if you're close enough to them, sometimes they appear luminous. You can see through them, but they're there. And the thing started rolling, and it was coming right at me. And all I could say was, holy shit. And I jumped and got behind my granddaddy, and he said, there's no need for you to fear those things, honey. He said, that's just your ancestors. Don't worry about it. And you see them. Now, Gary and I talked about this, too. One thing that I saw that made me think, well, let me back up a little bit. Like I said, there's been so many people that have come and tried to explain these. There's no explanation. They first thought, like I said, the gases. Then they thought it was the rock formation, the crystal, not the crystal, the quartz rocks, yeah, and the movement of the earth that might be sparking flames.
A piezoelectric effect. Go ahead.
Yeah. And that they proved that wasn't so. The next thing that I kind of believe outside of course, I'm going to believe what the Cherokees believe first, is could it be a place for UFOs? Because if you're standing on one lookout, there's several places off of the road that you can stand and watch these things dance all over the mountain. If you know the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when they were all watching these ships come in and all these little bitty, tiny ships were flying around meeting the mothership. They're tiny, and they sort of look like that. So that could be one explanation of what is taking place. Maybe it is a UFO.
Yeah. Well, let's run this National Geographic clip.
Okay.
And listen closely as they try to explain what it is that they're seeing.
Station 1 is located on the left-hand side of the Brown Mountain Overlook. Here, they'll collect readings from the Geiger counter and the EMF detector. Station 2 is the central location. This station will focus on using night vision to spot the lights. Station 3 is to the right of the overlook and will allow the team to see the lights from another angle. These three stations will give the team a wide view of the gorge where witnesses usually spot the lights.
The conditions are getting ripe.
All right, let's do it.
If the lights appear, the team is ready. But they aren't the only ones looking for answers. But Joshua Warren and his team on Brown Mountain believe the phenomena is much more mysterious. 2 hours into their search, their equipment suddenly goes haywire.
Wow, now I'll tell you what, now this is weird.
The EMF meter spikes.
I've never seen anything higher than 50 on that.
Marking a sudden fluctuation in the mountain's magnetic field. Then Station 2 radios in a sighting.
Joshua, come in, over.
This is Station 1 to Station 2.
Hey, Joshua, we are experiencing an anomaly down in the gorge.
Here, on my camera, it's right here. You see that? Right above my fingertip. If it's a fire, you would see smoke through the night vision.
Station 3 can still observe an anomaly to our immediate right.
Warren arrives to see for himself.
Okay, I do.
Yeah. Let me point this out for Josh.
Right here, Josh?
They use a laser pointer to point out the anomaly.
I got it.
Okay.
Zeroing in on the light, the investigation intensifies. The mystery light activity on Brown Mountain starts to pick up.
Let's hit it with a thermal camera and see if we can. We ought to be able to figure out if that's a campfire.
All right, I got it.
It doesn't seem to be showing up on the thermal camera. I would expect a fire to, unless it's just out of range.
The team uses a long-range temperature gauge to see if they can rule out fire as the cause.
Baseline, 59, 60. It's actually colder. It is definitely colder than the surrounding area.
And then a dancing ball of light appears in the distance.
You ever see anything like it, Josh?
I'm not sure what the heck that was.
What is that? And Josh, it's showing up on night vision blue.
Maybe this is a reflection of some kind.
The hell was it?
Station 1, over.
Roger, over.
Okay, just a moment ago, Dean saw and was able to videotape a rather distinct bluish luminous form, and we're trying to see if we can rule out any lasers or other lights. Were you shining any light lasers or lights at that station, over?
No, we've got a green laser and no one.
You know what? It looked like it almost manifested again. Oh!
It's right here. Right here.
Suddenly, another light appears in the gorge. It's bright enough to cast light on the trees below, before taking off into the distance.
It shouldn't be blue on night vision.
They can't believe their eyes.
Was there a light being shined that we didn't know about? Because if that wasn't a reflection, I'm not sure what the heck that was.
Well, well, well. What do you think about that? Yeah, the Brown Mountain is an amazingly mysterious, and like I said earlier, I mean, we're talking how many millions of years have the Appalachian, how many, it's been there for a very long time, Gigi's Boom.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there's places that scare people, that, you know, you have this eerie feeling, even with the lights that's happened all these years and the many times that I've been there. I know where the dangerous part is, like the water. I've got really fast-moving waters up there. I've never been afraid up there. Mm-hmm. The only time I was afraid when I said, holy shit, with Granddaddy when the thing was coming at us. But I don't fear it. That's one place that I can go and it doesn't bother me. I feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's that people will say, that's the strangest thing that I've ever heard anybody say about something of the paranormal going on or something unexplainable going on and you feel at home.
Right.
But I feel at home there. I feel very comfortable.
Yeah, and unlike other places that aren't too far away.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so, see, I don't think you mentioned this. The tribe has never put Brown Mountain off limits for safety reasons.
No.
Unlike this other place?
Chimney Rock. And the bottomless pools up there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm literally frightened to death. Of there, and they, for years, our warriors would bypass Hickory Nut Gorge, Bat Cave, Chimney Rock, Lake Lure, which wasn't Lake Lure back then, but the bottomless pools were there, and they would take another route to go down into the Piedmont where they grew the tobacco, and because the holy men told them to not go to that place because the spirit said not to go. And it's where the bottomless pools, we can send them that link to see that too. I won't even look at it. I went up there one time and I didn't think I was going to get back down. I was petrified, but that's where they say the underworld meets the upper world and we're to stay away from it. But Brown Mountain, never.
Yeah. Talk, we have just a couple of minutes. Can you talk a little bit about the underworld for the people out there?
Well, the underworld is just what it says. You know, it's the world that's under us that we even know that there's things there that we don't mess with, and they're very real and they're dangerous. And we're to only look for the good. We're to stay away from the bad. And the underworld is full of what people now would call demons. We called them, we've got one story of the big leeches. They would grab you and take you in the hall. I don't know. It's, you know, it's just, that's all I'm going to talk about.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's
a little upsetting area for me.
That's kind of a touchy topic. There's bottomless pits. Now, people have drowned in there, and recently.
Yes.
So, and such a...
Mysteriously, children would be standing beside their parents, two children, and the parents would turn around. The children wouldn't be there.
Right.
And they would have to send divers in, and the divers, even in that area, don't even want to go down, and they would find the children swirling.
Mm-hmm.
Around and around, and about 50 or 60 feet. These are holes, guys. These are not, it's a creek, and there's holes. I'll get Gary to, while he talks, I'll see if I can find that.
Now wait a minute. Keep talking. I'll pull up
okay.
Chimney Rock, bottomless pits. Let me mute while I'm doing this. That way I'm
but
not making...
it's really scary, and our holy men told us to stay away, and that's what we do. We stay away. We don't go there. But they've never had anything done anything, you know, with Brown Mountain. It's always been a place of beauty, but all the mountains are beautiful, I think, and it's wonderful. May to go up there. So anyway, that's it. I think that we all have some stories, and Gary just put the link in for the bottomless pools. You can see it. But
yeah, and I have one more I'll stick in. See, from the shoreline or from the bank, I guess I should say, they don't look like any big deal.
Oh, they're hundreds of feet deep.
They don't look like any big deal, but the gopher.
You go ahead and do that and just keep talking because you've missed the one that I wanted you to send.
Yes, I have.
Hang on a minute, and I'm going to look for it, and then I'll drop it.
Okay, go ahead and find it. But you can see, this is limestone, and remember, we talked about 480 million years old. So that's a long time for water to erode, and so many caverns, and I could tell stories about that too, but we have no time left.
Yeah, we do. Wait just a minute. I found it. Hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
Just a second, and I'm going to drop it in. Please watch this video, and you will see. Okay, there you go.
There you go. Okay, just want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. We have a little different outro. We'll leave with a song. And some of y'all kind of like this kind of music. We do. It's Appalachian music. And it's relative to the topic. So anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks to Grim Near, RealLibertyMedia.com. Thanks for having us. And hello to Suspect Sky, who joined us. Thanks, Adrian, for coming by.
Yeah, be sure that you watch the whole video. It's going to show you just some stills, then it'll take you to the actual holes live. You'll see it move.
Okay. Got anything else to say, Boo Boo, before we roll out?
Love y'all big to my heart.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
Okay, you kind of faded out there, Boo Boo. I don't know what happened. Anyway, we'll catch up with you next time on The Road Less Traveled. See ya. Bye-bye.
Way out on old Linville Mountain, where the Bear and the Catamount range, there a strange ghostly light can be seen every night, which no scientist or hunter can explain. In the mountains of North Carolina near Linville, there exists a strange phenomenon called the Brown Mountain Lights. On a clear night, these lights will appear and move about in a ghost-like manner on the mountaintop and down in the valley. These lights have been observed since the early days of the covered wagon, and to this day, no one can explain their mystery. Even scientists who come from various parts of the world can offer no solution. Uncle Fate Wiseman, who spent his entire 80 years in these mountains, used to tell this story, which to me could be as true as any other tale ever told, about the legend of the Brown Mountain Lights. In the days of the old covered wagon, when they camped on the flat for the night, with the stars growing dim on the old high gorge rim, they'd watch for that brown mountain light. High on the mountain, then down in the canyon below, it shines like the crown of an angel and fades as the mist comes and goes. Way over yonder, night after night until dawn, while a faithful old slave come back from the grave, while he's searching, searching, searching for his master who's long, long gone. Long years ago, a southern planter came hunting in this wild land alone. And here, so they say, the hunter lost his way and never returned to his own. While his trusty old slave brought a lantern.